It's Free Talk Live. Dial toll free. Join us right here. Our number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And we have Skype, so you can Skype into the show if you'd like. Our Skype username is lrn.fm. Joining you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
Chris.
And Daryl.
Chris is back from, I presume, was a Linux conference. What was it?
Bellingham? Bellingham, Washington. It was Northwest Linux Fest. Northwest.
Oh, Northwest. Northwest. Okay. I was going to say, double your fest.
Yeah.
Double your fun. So welcome back from thinkpenguin.com. As we continue, we'll take your calls about anything, but we're going to start out tonight. Daryl, you've got a story about a man who has been exonerated after how many years in prison?
25 years in prison.
Wow. Some people haven't even lived that long. Can you imagine spending 2.5 decades behind bars?
That would be almost my entire life.
Yeah, as an innocent man.
Yes. Story comes from the Innocence Project. William Barnhouse is the 350th person exonerated through DNA evidence. And the story actually...
Nationwide or just Indiana?
Nationwide.
Okay.
Story's actually from 2 days ago, but I just saw it today. Story begins, a judge today granted a motion by the Delaware County Prosecutor's Office to dismiss the 1992 rape charge against William Barnhouse based on new DNA evidence proving Barnhouse's innocence of the crime. With Delaware County Prosecuting Attorney Jeffrey Arnold's consent, the Innocence Project and the Wrongful Conviction Clinic at Indiana University McKinney persuaded a Delaware County court to reverse Barnhouse's conviction on March 8, 2017, based on the evidence. Further proceedings in the case were scheduled for May, and Arnold's decision to dismiss the indictment against Barnhouse, who has dealt his entire life with serious mental health conditions, ends his 25-year struggle for justice. Quote.
So now all he has to deal with is his mental health conditions.
Yes.
No longer having to deal with those conditions while in a cage. So basically it sounds like they convicted a crazy man of a rape that he didn't commit, right? This was a rape charge?
Yes. Quote, we're thankful to the Delaware County Prosecutor's Office for moving quickly to dismiss the charges against Mr. Barnhouse. That quote from Seema Safia, staff attorney with the Innocence Project.
And by quickly, they mean after 25 years?
No, in March. Okay. There was the evidence presented to the court in March.
I see.
And then in May, they formally said, okay,
got it.
Charges dropped. So that's kind of quick for courts. March to May. Mr. Barnhouse has waited a long time for this day.
Yeah.
While no innocent person should have to endure wrongful incarceration, prison can be especially devastating for someone like Mr. Barnhouse, who is dealing with lifelong mental health conditions. Barnhouse said, it was rough. I was always innocent. I'm glad it's finally over. I feel so happy. In December.
I wonder if they're going to pay him out.
I don't know.
Yeah. I would hope so.
We'll see if they... Yeah. Cover that later in the story. In December 1992, Barnhouse was convicted of an April 21st, 1992 rape that occurred behind a vacant building in Muncie, Indiana. Shortly after the incident, police picked up Barnhouse and made him stand next to three squad cars and several police officers in an identification procedure. With police shining flashlights in his face, the victim identified him. On the basis of this identification, Barnhouse was arrested. Known as a one-on-one show-up, this has been described as the most suggestive identification procedure ever used by police. So it sounds like
it's called a one-on-one
show-up. So they've got somebody in handcuffs, standing there next to police.
Mm-hmm.
They bring up the victim. Is this the guy that did it? And then the person basically says yes.
Yeah.
Instead of having a lineup of here's 10 people that fit the description, pick out the guy.
I thought it was three people. I thought you said they lined up three people.
They lined him up next to three squad cars and several police officers.
Gotcha.
So handcuffed man standing, being surrounded by police officers. Is this the guy in handcuffs? Is this the guy that
basically
did it?
Pointing at the guy saying, this is him, and trying to get
this is the guy we arrested. He's the guy that did it, right?
Yep.
Wow. At trial, the prosecution relied on the show-up identification as well as testimony of a forensics serologist from the Indiana State Police Crime Lab who provided testimony disproven by recent DNA testing that Barnhouse could not be excluded as a possible source of semen recovered from the victim's vaginal and cervical swabs and semen in the inside crotch area of her jeans, which she put back on immediately after the assault. In addition, a microscopic hair analysis from the Indiana State Police Crime Lab testified that a hair recovered from the victim's body matched Barnhouse's hair standard. He testified that if he placed that one hair on the victim's head or from the victim's body in a pile of Barnhouse's pubic hair, he could not pick out which hair it was. Which basically sounds like, yep, the hair's the same color and, you know, consistency, yeah. So therefore it's got to be his.
Yeah, that's different than DNA testing, which, you know, correct, they didn't have back then, right? Or at least it wasn't as prolific.
Right. Significantly, in closing, the prosecution argued that this hair was a silent witness that proved that Barnhouse committed the crime. The prosecution also argued that the semen recovered from the victim's body and jeans came from Barnhouse, although Barnhouse maintained that he was mistakenly identified. Mm-hmm. He was convicted and sentenced to 80 years prison. He eventually sought the help of the Innocence Project through a letter he wrote from prison. The Innocence Project, working with the Wrongful Conviction Clinic at Indiana University McKinney.
Can you imagine how many requests these people get?
Oh, I can't
imagine.
I mean,
a lot.
You think the ACLU gets a lot of requests? I mean, the Innocence Project's got to be deluged with prisoners who, you know, believe they were wrongfully convicted.
Right. So the Innocence Project and the Wrongful Conviction Clinic wound up getting some DNA samples, and the Delaware County Prosecutor's Office consented to the DNA testing. The same male DNA profile was identified on the sperm of the vaginal swab and the sperm on the jeans. Barnhouse was excluded as the source of the semen.
Case closed.
Based on these results, the Delaware County Prosecutor's Office agreed that Barnhouse had been wrongly convicted.
Wow.
And jointly moved with the Innocence Project to vacate the conviction. Again, that motion filed back in March. The judge reversed the conviction in March. And then there was that further proceeding in May where they officially dismissed all of the charges against Barnhouse. Since his release in March, so he was released in March, but then, you know, the charge wasn't officially dropped until 2 days ago. Barnhouse has received round-the-clock care and service and is doing very well, they say. He has also been reunited with his family after 25 years in prison as an innocent man. The Innocence Project and Francis Lee Watson, director of the Wrongful Conviction Clinic at Indiana University McKinney, notified Barnhouse of the news. In 2013, the FBI acknowledged that testimony asserting that a crime scene hair is a match to a particular defendant's hair through microscopic hair comparison implies a level of certainty that exceeds the limits of science.
I agree with them.
Yeah, there's
I'm surprised the FBI testified that way.
There's so much forensic stuff that goes on that's just it's not scientific. It fails just miserably to be forensic.
Which is why I'm surprised the FBI would even make a statement like that, because it would seem to make it harder for them to get convictions.
Possibly, but it could have just been, and I don't know the circumstances around what happened in 2013 where the FBI finally admitted, yeah, this is pseudoscience.
Yeah.
But, you know, it does sound kind of like the whole phrenology thing, to where you feel someone's got, oh, you've got a bump right here. That must mean that you have this disorder. And now we're going to wind up doing chemical castration.
Ooh.
Because they did that at one time. That's in this scary country. The story continues. A review by the FBI, the DOJ, the Innocence Project, and the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers of FBI analysts' testimony and reports have revealed that analysts provided erroneous testimony or reports in more than 90% of case reviews so far.
We're going to continue here. The toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. You know, beyond this news, what can we really glean from this? We're going to dig in a little bit further here. It's Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live. You may dial toll-free and join us here. Our number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. I've got a MyPillow. Daryl's got a MyPillow. They're great pillows, and I use mine every night. And if I didn't like it, I wouldn't be using it because I've got other pillows I can use. But this one's fantastic, and I've been using it for about a year. It's great because it's designed to fit to the shape of your body and hold your neck in the proper position. And it's also guaranteed to last for 10 years. You can also wash it in your washer and dryer. You can then dry it in the dryer. It's an amazing product. You go to MyPillow.com, use code FTL, and that is how you get 50% off. And by the way, you've got a 60-day window of time to decide whether you like it or not. If you don't, you can ship it back to them, and they'll give you your purchase price back. So just go to MyPillow.com with code FTL to get that half off or two for the price of one. It is up to you. That's MyPillow.com. Coming up, some sneaky, sneaky computer companies. Chris from ThinkPenguin.com is going to tell us about Intel and HP doing some naughty things behind the scenes on some of their computers. We're going to get to that here in moments. We're talking about the Innocence Project and yes. One of their more recent cases, case number 350 or something like that.
Case 350, as far as the people exonerated because of DNA evidence.
Right. Successful case number 350.
Correct.
Where the Innocence Project has teamed up with all these people who've been wrongfully imprisoned. This recent guy, like 2.5 decades.
25 years, yes.
For a rape he didn't commit.
Correct.
Was convicted on the basis of a hair found on the body looked like it could have been his.
We put it up under a microscope and found it to be a quote-unquote match. And
which means
there we
this
go.
Is a black hair with the same consistency as this other piece of black hair over here.
Pretty much. Yeah. And again,
but not a match as far as DNA was concerned.
Correct.
25 years later, they did the DNA test and found out, oh, this guy's innocent.
Yep. Mm. And again, a review by the FBI, the Department of Justice, the Innocence Project, and the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers of FBI analysts, testimony and reports has revealed that analysts provided erroneous testimony or reports in more than 90% of cases reviewed.
Wow.
So far. The analyst who provided the erroneous testimony in Barnhouse's case is not subject to that review because the review only includes FBI analysts, not the many analysts throughout the country who were trained by the FBI.
Wow.
Or who relied on the same techniques and testimony that the FBI used.
Needless to say, the rate of failure would probably be very similar with the rest of the analysts.
Probably,
yeah.
If not slightly higher.
Good chance of it.
And there's a quote from
these people
Watson.
Sound like they need to get fired. I mean, all of these analysts, 90% of the time they're wrong. That is just unsustainable in the marketplace.
We're talking about 25 years here. I wonder how many of them are still operating or still in, doing their thing even.
Probably not. Not very many.
Yeah.
Right? But they may have
most
new
of them
people
are probably
doing the same job.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah.
But I mean, when it takes 25 years to get exonerated and for the evidence or testimony or the people testifying against you to be, identified as being essentially fraudulent.
Right. And there won't be any penalty. I mean,
yeah.
Even if that person's still collecting a paycheck or whatever, it's not like they're going to dock his pay because he screwed something up. He did his job, right? Like,
right.
Well, they gave me this hair to compare to this other hair, and I compared them and I testified. They looked similar. They're a match. Structurally, but that
right.
doesn't mean that they're a match DNA-wise.
Right.
So.
Francis Lee Watson, again, who's the director of the Wrongful Conviction Clinic at Indiana University McKinney, says the only way for the state to know whether other people were wrongly convicted by erroneous hair testimony is for the state to conduct a thorough and independent review of all cases where microscopic hair analysis was conducted and contributed to a conviction. I hope this heartbreaking case will spur the state to take immediate action. And then they have a link to a donation page where you can help, get Mr. Barnhouse back on his feet after 25 years
Amazing.
Of wrongful incarceration.
So it does sound like they're not going to give him anything. There's a donation page so, folks can help him out. And I'm certainly not saying to not do that, but the state was the one who put him in the prison cell.
Right. And again, because this is, you know, so fresh, mm-hmm. basically, to where, you know, the charges were officially dismissed 2 days ago.
I see.
The process of, hey, wind up making some restitution is probably, you know, just now being thought about.
Yeah, unfortunately, you probably have to bring a separate case to ask
yes.
for restitution.
Oh, absolutely. You definitely have to bring a separate case.
It'd be nice if that could just be included as part
it
of...
It would, but this is the state.
Right. It'd be nice if they said, oh, looks like we've wrongfully convicted you, sir. Well, here's the, you know, the statute says that anyone convicted wrongfully gets, you know, $100,000 per year for every year you're behind bars. So let's see, that's, you know, a cool $2.5 million. Here you go. Here's a check on the way out the door.
I don't think it's that high.
Oh, there is no such thing.
Yeah.
I was saying that would be nice.
Say there's no such thing because I'm trying to find out if he has been or if he has requested compensation, restitution of some sort.
You think there is a statute?
One of the first articles that I see is from the Innocence Project from 2016. Mm-hmm. Where the Michigan Senate was voting on a bill to wind up compensating those that were wrongfully convicted.
Oh, okay.
There have been other stories to where there were the three guys in North Carolina. I forget their names, but they all were exonerated. They were, mm-hmm. you know, huge victories for the Innocence Project, had served 39 years on death row before being exonerated. And several months later wound up getting multi-million-dollar compensation packages for that wrongful conviction.
All right.
So, yeah, I think it's very likely that William Barnhouse will wind up getting something. Now,
What's a good amount? The
problem is it's going to come from the taxpayers who were funding to hold him.
That's a problem.
It's not coming from the judge that wrongly sentenced this guy. It's not coming from the prosecutor. It's not coming from the analyst that compared the hair and then testified and said, these two hairs look close enough. String them up by the balls, boys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's sick. But, you know, again, what can we do to make this different in the future? Obviously, DNA
testing.
Remove
all of the various immunities that government officials have so that if they screw up, they personally wind up having to be held responsible. If I screw up by providing inaccurate testimony to a police officer, even though I don't know that it's inaccurate, well, I wind up getting convicted of providing false information to a police officer.
At least on the federal level.
Justice. Well, even at the local level, they could charge you with it.
I don't think they have that charge. They have obstructing. They might be able to finagle that into a charge, but that's an actual charge when it comes to lying to a federal agent. I don't believe every state has. Some states may have that, but I don't think all of them do.
Yeah, I know I've been told, you know, numerous times, you know, it's illegal to provide inaccurate information to a law enforcement officer.
Yeah, probably would be obstructing or refusal to process or something like that. Toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. Better to keep your mouth closed than to tell a lie to a cop, in my opinion. 855-450-3733.
Right, but if they ask, did you see a man in a red coat and you think the coat was a different color and you're like, I didn't see anything, and then they have video evidence of
better
you saw
to not
something.
Say anything, is what I said. More coming up here. This is Free Talk Live.
North to Port is a Liberty-inspired fiction podcast about a band on tour. Each episode chronicles the band's adventures in the form of a radio interview at a tour stop location. Listen as North to Port explores Liberty themes in friendly ways, with humor and music. To listen to the podcast and the accompanying album, please visit northtoport.com. That's NORTHTOPORT.com. Or just search North to Port in your favorite podcatcher.
Okay, toll-free number, if you want to join us here on Free Talk Live, it's 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Daryl, you had mentioned before the show there was this story about NSA malware that was crippling computers around the world. I was like, oh, well, you know, that's not a surprise. But turns out it's a ransomware build of that malware that has been crippling computers, which means Bitcoin is hitting the news in a big way right now.
Yeah, that's right.
And not in a good way. We're going to get into that coming up here in moments. But we're in the middle of this, where we finished the story about the accused rapist who has been exonerated after 25 years in prison because of DNA evidence. And I just wanted to kind of talk about, you know, what are some of the changes that can be made. You talked, Daryl, about ending immunity. The government agents, some people don't realize this, but government agents have all kinds of different types of immunity.
Correct.
That have been built into the laws to prevent them from being held responsible financially or criminally for a lot of the things that they do as part of their jobs.
And legislators, this is something that surprised the ever-loving crap out of me a couple weeks ago. Apparently, there are legislators that don't realize that police and other government officials have these immunities.
Oh, I'm not surprised by that. I mean, how would they know? There are so many laws, there's so many rules, there's so many statutes. No one could possibly know what they all are.
Right, but, you know, it's hard to, you know, be, and maybe it's just because I'm a news junkie.
That's right. It's because you and those of us on the show, we pay attention to criminal justice news, and the average person doesn't. The average
person, you would think that a state representative
would
pay a little bit more attention to things.
No.
Especially one serving on the Judiciary Committee.
Okay, you would expect
Legislative branch.
Yeah,
you would expect them to pay attention.
Okay. Yeah, okay. You would expect a little more out of someone in judiciary or criminal justice.
And, you know, there was that hearing that we were at a couple weeks ago, and thank you for filming, where it was on a bill that would expand the authority of state police. And
that's
it
right,
would
yeah.
have codified again that as long as they act in good faith, they can't be held accountable for what they do.
True. What happened with that bill? Do you remember offhand?
It's not been exact.
Okay.
That's the term for when the committee makes a decision on what to do with the bill. They've not held that yet, to my knowledge.
Waiting. Okay.
But I testified, and there was one of the state reps who was like, but what do you mean that they can do whatever they want and not be held accountable? And so then I rattled off, you know, like half a dozen cases where police have done horrible things, like throw a flashbang grenade into a baby's crib, shoot a 7-year-old girl during a no-knock raid because she didn't obey the commands to, you know, not move, put your hands where I can see them, get on the ground. Well, we didn't know that she was a 7-year-old girl. We just knew that she disobeyed our command. We didn't know that there was a baby in the crib on the other side of the wall because we had no way of knowing what was on the other side of the wall.
In those cases, they'll first be sort of let off the hook by the claim that, we were just doing our job. We had a right to be there. We had our warrant. We were just serving the warrant. And that includes bombing, houses and, shooting flashbangs
but
and all that.
But if I did any of those things, I would be in prison right now.
Sure. Well, you don't have the authorization
but
of a man in a robe.
The police do those things, and they're told, there's no claim upon which relief can be given. None of the civil rights have been violated. They were acting in good faith.
Well, right. And here's the thing. Even if it can be said that they were acting in good faith, so therefore, or let's say that even if it was wrong, like they weren't acting in good faith and they did something wrong, a lot of times the bureaucrats themselves won't be held responsible. The department or the taxpayers or whatever, they're the ones that have to foot whatever kind of restitution comes up. The bureaucrats themselves are protected beyond anything else out there. It's very hard to get one of them to be held personally responsible for their own actions.
Right. Every now and then, you will see a story of police officer convicted of, some sort of horrible offense because he did something that he knew to be wrong and violated someone's rights. But then any restitution to the victim comes from the taxpayers,
almost
not
always
from the officer.
Almost always, yeah. So those are the things that need to change.
Yeah, you know what bugs me about all of this is the cops are trained to lie. And this is why for people who have interacted with police on a regular basis, you know they're lying. And they know they're lying, but they're trained to lie, and they can get away with it. So when they order you to do something, they might know that they're ordering you to do something that's, you know, not even unconstitutional or violation of your rights, but they don't care because they can use that against you later.
So
if
long you as
you
do it,
disobey.
Yeah,
right, right. So you can't even refuse to disobey.
Well, you can, but consequences will come immediately.
Right.
So you have to sort it out later.
What did the judge down in Palmer tell you when you got arrested for filming inside the town hall? She said something along the lines of, just do whatever the police officers say and then file a complaint and challenge it later.
I don't agree with that particular viewpoint. But yeah, that's a common statist viewpoint, is that even if you believe the officer is wrong, you should obey the officer.
Yeah, that's,
and that is a huge problem and will lead to oppression.
I don't even think that's just the judge's opinion. That's like in law somewhere. There's rulings on that.
There's definitely court precedent to back up that judge's opinion.
It's just what they want you to do. I mean, there have been plenty of instances where activists up here have stood on principle and gotten themselves arrested, just as you did a few weeks ago, and they challenge it successfully through the courts after that. That essentially brings the case for you, right? So the criminal case, if something happens to you and then you want to challenge it, they're saying, oh, go ahead and pay $300 and take a case to court. Whereas if you get arrested, you go to jail for a moment, or you go through and get handcuffed and taken back to the police station and all of that. But then there's already a case that's been filed in the system. And yes, it is a different kind of defense to have to defend criminally versus going to civil courts and suing. But it can be done both ways, is what I'm saying.
Civil court is incredibly difficult.
Yes, it's
because
very
arduous.
Because
they will almost always say, you have failed to state a claim upon which relief can be granted.
Yeah,
because
that's
true. Here's all the immunities they have.
Yeah. So I don't agree with the judge's opinion in that case. And in the case in Palmer, I was arrested for recording video in a town hall. Kind of similar to yours, but you were arrested for being in the street.
Well, yeah, see, we printed up this sign that says no filming. The ink is still wet on the sign, but we printed a sign.
Right. They just put a paper sign up in the window or on the front door of the town hall saying no video recording allowed, because they knew we were coming there that day.
Who specifically did that?
Some town bureaucrat.
It wasn't like...
We don't know who it was.
Yeah, it wasn't like something that was authorized by...
Well, someone authorized it.
It was authorized by the guy sitting at the computer that hit print.
That's right. And
or the gal.
So that's just like what you were saying, where the cops will say something to you illegal, or in this case, any bureaucrat will say things to you that, you know, they're not legally allowed to do, but it's the question of, can they get away with it? And if they make a statement that sounds authoritative and they're standing there with their hand on their gun and they got a badge and, you know, a barking dog or whatever, people will think that this is the truth.
I'm going to have to ask you to search your cart. Yes, you have to ask, because if you just do it, you know that's illegal and evidence gets thrown out. And most people are too
ignorant. They don't know.
To know that when they say, I have to ask to search your car, you can say, well, I have to ask you to produce a warrant.
Yeah, and the best part of this is if you don't respond by saying, I invoke my right to remain silent, that can be used against you consent for the search.
Yes.
So, there's more to say here about, you know, what can we do? So, obviously, getting rid of bureaucratic immunity, that would be a huge step in the right direction, but also would be incredibly difficult to pull that one off. That's not to say we shouldn't try, but it would be interesting to see those bureaucrats come in to try to defend their immunity in whatever public hearing would happen here in New Hampshire if somebody were to put that bill forward. Hint, hint to any legislators listening. 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. More coming up. It's Free Talk Live. You can dial toll-free and join us here. Our number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We've got Skype, and the Skype username here is lrn.fm. Tonight, it's Ian,
Chris,
and Daryl.
Coming up tonight, the ransomware hitting the world at the moment, thanks to the NSA. NSA's malware was released a little while back, and now apparently some hackers and crackers have been busily modifying it to deliver ransomware into people's system. And what is ransomware? Well, we'll tell you more about it coming up here in moments. Our toll-free number, if you want to join us, though, 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733, and Skype in to join us here at Skype username lrn.fm. We were talking about people who have been exonerated after having been convicted and spent time, in the most recent case, 25 years behind bars.
Yes.
For a rape that a man did not commit, he's been exonerated by DNA evidence now. And Daryl, the first thing that you said when I asked, well, what can we do about this? Because it's one thing to report the good news, like, okay, great, there's number 350, innocent person who has been released from prison since the Innocence Project began. That's great news. But, you know, where can we take this from here? So you said get rid of bureaucratic immunity, things like qualified immunity. What are some of the other names?
There's qualified immunity.
Sovereign
immunity. And then there's statutory immunity.
Right.
So statutory immunity is some men and women in a building with a giant gold nipple on top of it decided to write something in statute saying that you can't be held liable when you do
something
X.
Wrong. Yeah.
Qualified immunity is basically, well, courts have ruled that you can't be held liable when you do X, and the other one, sovereign immunity, is you can't be held liable because you're one of the king's men.
Yep, you're a government worker, so you're more special and more important than everyone
else.
And
because the very first king said that he had immunity, and then all of his men had immunity, then all of the king's men
for all time
wind up having immunity.
That's how crazy it is. That's really
how it
is.
That's why nobody got held accountable when Humpty Dumpty fell off the wall and all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again.
That's what that story was
about. Sovereign immunity.
So here's the other let's think about some other things that could change here. I think one of the things that a lot of us would like to see in our fantasy realm is an end to the government monopoly over courts and, you know,
certainly.
Private arbitration, yeah. A competitive market in courts, basically, that it would not be one size fits all. And that is a big topic that I don't know how deep we want to get into, but there's a great book called The Market for Liberty that I made an audiobook of years ago. It's free to read and free to download online. It's a fantastic book by Morris and Linda Tannehill, where they get into some really interesting detail on how a system like that might work, because obviously it's hard to kind of put yourself outside of the current structure that we have and try to imagine what would things be like if victims and the victimizer actually were able to choose their court, basically, which is kind of a crazy idea, and it's kind of hard to really grasp.
Right.
But what it could result in is, of course, better courts moving faster and more efficiently and giving better rulings, and more importantly, accountability. If somebody is to, you know, if we don't have a government monopoly on, let's say, law enforcement, and again, law enforcement would be the wrong term, let's say protection. If we don't have a government monopoly on protection, which, of course, we know the current government doesn't even have an obligation to protect you, but let's presume they did.
Well, don't presume that now. Most people don't know this.
Yeah,
well,
that's true.
They write on the side of their police cars to protect and serve.
But yeah, that's not what the courts have ruled. Numerous.
Well, they are there.
Right, but it's what they write on the side of their cop car, so it must be true.
Well, it is true. They just don't say the full statement. The full statement is the police are there to serve and protect the state. Yeah. They're not there to serve and protect you.
Right.
But people jump to a conclusion and figure it means they're there to serve and protect you, but that's just not the case.
Right.
But let's just presume that the police did actually have an obligation to protect you, and every now and then they might actually provide that service to you just because. In the marketplace, you would have a contract with a service agency, and you could try to protect yourself
right.
as well. But
people do if you have money, right?
Yeah, that is available today. And if they don't deliver on their service of protection, then you might get your
fire them.
You not only could you fire them, but you might get some sort of liability out of them for that. Meaning that if they violate their contract, there could be provisions to where they'd have to pay up, and they might have insurance to make sure they could pay
right.
on situations like that. So let's come back around to this idea of the case of the rape. If there's some sort of private investigator that's checking out this case, and he comes and says, Mr. Smith, I believe that, I forget the dude's
Barnhouse.
Name. Mr. Barnhouse, we believe that you committed this rape. You're under arrest. Well, now they've just taken that man away from his freedom. They've conducted the act of kidnapping against him under the auspices that this person did what they say that he did. But if it turns out that they can't prove that he did what they say he did, if the evidence doesn't convince, if there is any evidence, and if it doesn't convince the whoever the arbitrator is in that case,
right,
then the ruling would be against the company that picked that man up. And the ruling would be, not only is this man to be set free, but you must compensate him for what you did.
Right.
And that just doesn't happen today. And so there's no penalty for prosecutors and for police and for all these bureaucrats who get involved in picking up the wrong guy. The police want to pick somebody up because they want to make it look like they got somebody. They
want
to make
prosecutors want the conviction because they get promotions based on conviction rates.
And they want to run for a political office, and they want to be able to point to their conviction record and say, "Ah, look, I've saved us from all these dastardly criminals," when of course many of them were innocent to begin with. So again, there's no punishment for these people in the current government monopoly structure, and
right,
I'm sure they like it that way because it means they can screw up and ruin people's lives without any real kind of responsibility.
The scenario that you're giving here of there's not a monopoly over justice would, by its very nature, also include what I suggested of eliminate the immunities.
Mm-hmm.
So, these aren't mutually exclusive things. So, the scenario of competing courts would, by its very nature, eliminate the immunities.
Well, yours was a first step, right? Ending the entire monopoly on justice is going to be a very hard thing to do.
Yes.
It's a little less hard to just end immunities.
Like, right,
you could end the immunities right now and still have a state. You could still have the monopoly court system.
Right.
They're going to fight tooth and claw against it.
Correct.
But it would at least be politically more feasible sooner to do something like that than to say, all right, let's completely rearrange the chairs of justice. That whole system,
right,
needs to be completely reworked.
And dare I say, if the police in, I forget the municipality in Indiana where this happened, if the police weren't, trying to find somebody with two joints and a bag of something, then maybe they would have had time to actually investigate and try to find the person that raped someone 25 years ago.
Maybe so.
Because right now, all we know is this woman was raped 25 years ago. The guy they convicted wasn't the guy that did it. There's a rapist still out there.
It's true, but there's also an issue of competency and whether or not there's even any evidence in the first place that has been left behind that they can go on to try and track somebody down that may have,
actually
done the rape.
Well, they've got the DNA evidence on her genes that they used to compare to his DNA to say that he didn't do it.
Sure.
Let's go to your calls and thoughts. Michael is on the line in Orlando watching us on YouTube via cam.freetalklive.com. Hello, Michael.
Hey, guys. Hey. How you doing?
What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I heard earlier, I think, I don't know which one of you guys were talking about the how cops are trained to lie and everything, right?
Yes.
Someone said that.
That was me.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think it's such a stretch to when you look into some of the, the shootings or whatever, that they could be fake because they are trained to lie, like you were saying. Like, I live in Orlando, like I told you, and the Pulse nightclub shooting, I actually even knew one of the people that was there on television, and I 100% know that that was a set up shooting. Those crisis actors there, I knew.
Okay,
half
hold
the people
on a
there.
Second. Let me see if I can follow what you're saying here. You're saying that the Pulse nightclub shooting wasn't real.
No, that it was a real event, but it wasn't like people actually didn't die there. That was like
the real event? Because the whole point of the news was that people died in that shooting. So what were are you saying
they
happened?
Died, but the people that they said died, half of them weren't even actual people. I mean, you could do research on it for 10 minutes, you'd see it. And I actually knew one of the people there, and he's works in a magician show. He's an actor. He was there. So,
and he's saying there was shooting, but nobody got shot or no one died.
Oh,
Hold on, Michael. This is the first claim I've heard about this. 855-450-FREE, but not surprised.
Bitcoin.com recently reported Bitcoin transaction fees have increased by more than 1,200% since 2015. To many Bitcoin proponents, the current fee market is moving way too fast, making Bitcoin unusable for certain transactions. The fee market and slow confirmation times have also increased the tension concerning the block size debate. However, if there are wallets with low amounts of Bitcoin that can't cover the fees, they become virtually unspendable. Learn more at news.bitcoin.com. That's news.bitcoin.com.
Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live. Dial on in toll free and join us here. Our number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We do have Skype, and the Skype username is lrn.fm. In the studio tonight, you've got Ian,
Chris,
and Daryl.
As we continue, we'll take your calls about whatever's on your mind. Coming up, we got some disturbing tech news with a major, major strike against people all around the world by a hack group that has utilized NSA software, NSA malware, to deliver what appears to be a bunch of ransomware. We'll tell you more about what ransomware is. It is not good. You do not want to get hit by one of these viruses. We'll tell you more about that coming up. And, of course, you can join us here, 855-450-3733. And we'll continue with your calls and thoughts. I do want to let you know, of course, about the terrible healthcare situation that we have here in the United States. And, of course, the government isn't going to make anything better for you anytime soon. You've got to take that responsibility into your own hands. And one way that you can do that is by going to healthexcellenceselect.com. Healthexcellenceselect.com will give you a proactive health assessment daily. They are not insurance, by the way. This is a healthcare sharing organization, so it's an alternative to insurance. They also offer no charge 24-hour access to doctors, a medical information card you can give to EMS, first responders, the emergency room, or whatever medical professional you want. And those doctors include traditional integrative chiropractic, acupuncture, and massage. You'll love the service and the price over at healthexcellenceselect.com. We go back to Michael in Orlando. So, Michael, you're trotting out a claim that is very similar to some other claims that we've heard from some of the more conspiracy-minded folks who call this show, and that is that not a single one of the mass shootings that have occurred in our adult lifetimes were ever real. And you haven't said that yet, but that is basically sort of the concurrence of all of these different claims that have been made, whether it's Sandy Hook, the elementary school shooting. People say that wasn't real, it didn't happen, the kids didn't exist. I mean, there's all kinds of just ridiculous claims. There was the claim about the reporter that got shot. Remember that crazy dude that shot the reporter out on the dock like a year or two ago? And now you're saying the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando from what, like a year and a half ago?
About a year ago.
That you're saying that was fake? And I just wanted to hear a little bit more about your claims here, Michael, because obviously there were hundreds of people in the club at that time. Are you saying that those people were all, you know, actors, or like, what are you saying?
Sure. Well, I don't want to get bunched in with every conspiracy theory, but
well, this is basically the same exact conspiracy theory,
sure,
just a different location.
It could be looked at that way, but I'm not disputing. I'm just talking about one specific.
Yeah, so let's hear.
So
what are you claiming?
50
happened?
People dead and the 53 people
here,
wounded.
So
it doesn't matter that you live there. You don't live in the club.
Sure, it does, because I know everyone that lives here.
You know
the people
all
that
everyone
knew,
all
in
Orlando.
In that individual area. Dead. Sure.
The 53 people reported wounded. You know all 103 people?
No, I know a couple of them, not all of them.
You know a couple of who?
The people that were there.
You know the couple of the people that that got shot?
Yeah, and the people that were there on video. That were
okay,
just,
wait, I thought you said
crying.
Earlier that people didn't get shot.
No one did get shot there. No one actually
Then why did you just say you knew people who got shot?
The people that were reported shot,
well,
probably.
I don't understand why it's such a big stretch when you said that cops are trained to lie. Why would it be a stretch that this could they could be lying about this.
It's way different when the cops are trained to lie to you on the side of the road when they pull you over and they separate
but
you and they say...
So the hospital personnel that were treating gunshot victims, they were all in on some sort of cover-up here?
A lot of the ones that were interviewed, the specific guy that was saying that he wore his bloody shoes for like 3 months, yeah, he was definitely a paid person, I would say. I don't know. A lot of the, if you know the people that were in the incident, the Pulse nightclub, a lot of them had criminal backgrounds or people that had criminal backgrounds.
What the hell's that have to do with anything?
Away. Well, that's a way of getting them to, you know.
You're saying they it's ridiculous. You're saying they hired.
That's a real thing.
You're saying they hired convicts and offered to wipe away their criminal records if they would go into the Pulse nightclub and agree with some sort of concocted story about a shooting?
Well, that a super far-stretched idea. I mean, why wouldn't they do that?
What's
ridiculous?
Gun grab,
what's the money grab?
What's the objective?
Kill two birds with one stone.
What's the objective?
I just said it was a money grab and a gun grab. You're gonna have guns. You know, maybe they don't want certain guns out in the street.
Did that happen? No, that didn't happen, did it?
What's the objective that, like, what would be the objective of like, the whole crisis acting?
The lawyer inside of me is going to say asked and answered. He already said that it's a money grab and they wanted to take away guns.
They did have a big charity and none of the victims had to pay any of their medical bills, which is very odd. Never happened before, but.
So now you're saying the fact that somebody raised some money for the victims is evidence that this was a conspiracy?
Well, a lot of the people had their GoFundMe.
What is wrong with you?
The shooting even happened.
Seriously,
research. I'm just intelligent.
I know they don't have basements there in Orlando. So, like, what is your problem?
Well, I know one of the crisis actors that was there. That's why
you know a crisis actor. Tell me what that means.
Yeah, he said it was a fake event.
Uh-huh.
It's what you
just
call
just because somebody tells you something doesn't mean that truth either.
I did a lot of research on it. You could do your own research. You could find out in 10 minutes.
We found out because, had seen plenty of reports and interviews with people who were there. There were hundreds of people in the club, many of whom were hiding from some madman who was shooting at people and shooting people to death. Are you saying that someone told you... Someone told you that they've been paid by the government to go into that club and to pretend as though there was a mass shooting there. By the way, there were...
No,
you know,
what happened was an entertainment agency is hired by the government, and the entertainment agency hired the guy that I know that was on television that was he was hugging the apparent lady that lost her son, and she's a crisis actor. She should try to get on a lot of different... I mean, I don't know if you guys don't do... It just takes... I mean, I'm sure you guys already know this.
Just because someone makes a meme that shows a girl who looks similar to other girls at pictures from scenes of violence doesn't mean that that person is correct. You understand that, right?
No, you have to do your own research on it and come up with your own conclusion.
Yeah, and other people have done research and they found out...
You just said one of the people there at the studio said that cops are trained to lie, so now all of a sudden... They only can lie in one situation. They can't lie in something else.
Yeah, it's not
weird.
The cops don't have to lie when you can hear gunshots coming from a nightclub, dude.
Well, do you know what a speaker system is? And it's a club. They have a speaker system. They could just have a recording of gunshots going off, and everyone gets scared. It's called a drill.
Are you really?
And then the bullet wounds and all of the people working in the hospital, they're all in on it.
It's like a real life movie, Daryl. It's all just a Hollywood make-believe. No one ever gets shot.
Why would they see people? Why would the government? Why would the money be? I don't understand the whole money grab thing. I mean, they can arrest people and basically for pointless charges and get money out of people too. Why would they?
They got millions of dollars.
Who got millions of dollars?
Yeah, I mean, they can just increase taxes. I don't understand why.
Go do your information on it, and you'll find out.
No, I'm asking you. Who got millions of dollars?
Yeah, they got millions of dollars.
Who?
Everybody. If you add up all the money that went to the families of the fake deaths, they got millions of dollars. And it's a fake event.
Why would... Hold on. Wait a minute. That doesn't make any sense.
And you guys should
bring it up. Hold on. Quit talking, all right? We can't have a conversation if you're not going to listen to the question. So hold on a moment. I'm trying to understand this. You just said that actors received millions of dollars...
From where?
...because of money that they were given because of deaths that didn't happen?
Yeah, because people got upset because people they thought died didn't really die, and they gave money to these people that are liars and criminals, and they took all the money.
Okay,
that's
so,
the real
thing. So you this keep is bringing a big scam, up. Hold on, you keep bringing up the fact that there were people that had criminal records. One out of every three people in this country. Hold on, listen!
He can't listen.
One out of every three people in this country has a criminal record because there are so many damn laws on the books. There's this thing called the war on drugs that winds up allowing police to arrest anybody for basically anything, and then they make stuff up.
I can't
handle this. So of course there's people with criminal records, you madman!
I can't handle more of this guy. I mean, it's just my IQ's dropping as the call continues. I can't even say thank you. Thank you for that call. It was absolutely horrifying. More coming up here. It's Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. The toll-free number here, 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. We do have Skype. The Skype username is lrn.fm. With you tonight, it's Ian.
Chris.
And Daryl.
So, that last call.
Plot twist, that last call didn't even happen.
He was a crisis actor. This whole crisis actor thing, it's so total, like, internet conspiracy theory, meme-based. I mean, no real evidence whatsoever for it from what I've seen.
Just do your research and you'll find out that the internet doesn't even exist.
Yeah, it's so frustrating to hear this because, people are just looking for some sort of thing to believe in, something that makes their life feel meaningful, and I don't understand why folks are so attracted to these what are obviously ridiculous conspiracy theories. I mean, it's more believable that the U.S. didn't go to the moon than that the Pulse nightclub shooting wasn't real, right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's
I'll give you that.
It's just absolutely ridiculous. And I found an article here from the Washington Post. And it's very lengthy. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It actually is titled, "The Truth Behind Your Orlando Shooting Hoaxes, Theories, and Conspiracies." I'm going to take an excerpt from the beginning of this story and from the very end. What happens here is Caitlin Dewey answers several of the common theories about the Pulse nightclub shooting specifically. And she writes in the beginning, "The internet always floods with rumors and theories after a tragedy, and the aftermath of the Orlando shooting has predictably been no different. In the immediate absence of a clear and coherent narrative, people are all too willing to invent their own versions. On Facebook, certain skeptics have circulated memes that allege three shooters attacked the Pulse nightclub. On YouTube, a viral video implies a link between Omar Mateen, the alleged shooter, and an Iranian imam. On Twitter, rumors floated that Mateen used the gay dating app Jacked and that a screenshot proved so. And in more obscure corners of the internet, a surprising but not unusual number of people have insisted that the whole thing was a false flag attack, a hoax." She says that the people who propagate these rumors, the last sort of rumors especially, often claim that the mainstream media never listens to or addresses them, and that is largely true because to someone who has just dropped everything, hopped a flight to Florida, and spent 3 days interviewing traumatized witnesses, the notion that the whole thing might be made up is patently ridiculous, which I completely agree with. And just because this guy calls a radio show and says, "Well, one of my friends is a crisis actor." Well, that's just you making a claim on the radio. I mean, right. What's more believable? Hundreds of victims, people who are there on the scene, people who actually witnessed what happened, or the fact that some random guy calls a radio show and claims to know someone who is a so-called crisis actor who was on the scene? Now, look, either the guy who either he does have a friend who claimed to be a crisis actor and his friend is just effing with him, or
which is possible,
or he's just making it up,
which is also possible.
Yeah, it's one or the other, because the odds that this in any way was a false flag is absolutely patently ridiculous.
I just have the greatest conspiracy theory to like debunk all the conspiracy theories. So the people going around saying I'm a crisis actor, I took part in blah blah blah, they're all crisis actors paid by the government to circulate conspiracy theories
about crisis actors
and false flags.
Now it's getting deep. Yeah. So here's the last part of her story. So again, she answers several questions about, you know, conspiracy theory stuff.
But just for the record, I don't actually believe the thing that I just said.
Right. Last and very least, she says, so again, this is after several questions. Yep. Last and very least, after tragedies like this one, and I'll post this full link on our Facebook and Twitter so you can check it out when you want. Thousands of internet goons inevitably come out of the woodwork to claim the whole thing was a hoax. They've said it's not physically possible to reload a semi-automatic rifle as many times as Mateen must have done. I remember hearing that claim when we were first talking about this a year ago. And that they're suspicious why there isn't any cell phone footage. Some conspiracy theorists also insist Mateen was working for the CIA or FBI since he'd had contact with the agency before. And then she asks some of her experts here to address this. She is talking to Matt Zaptowski, Mark Berman, and somebody else. Anyway, back to the story here. Ingram says, do we have accurate information on how many rounds were fired and how long time of a period? Regardless, the weapon he had used 30-round magazines. It takes just a few seconds to swap magazines. Manuals for similar weapons state an effective firing rate of 45 rounds per minute, but if he was just spraying around and didn't care about accuracy, he could have been shooting considerably faster than that. This is allegedly, and then they give some audio of him shooting 24 rounds in 9 seconds. Zaptowski says, there does exist some news footage of the immediate aftermath. I'm no gun expert, but I'm not exactly sure what is meant by it being physically impossible to reload a gun more than a certain number of times. Media has interviewed countless law enforcement officials, hospital staffer, witnesses, survivors, and victims, family members. Are they all in on the hoax? Paid actors? That's absurd. Now, what is it? Is it Occam's razor that is that which is the most likely explanation is... like the explanation just because it's the odds are that that's what it is. And I'm sure I'm misstating it to some extent here, but I mean, the odds that it would be anything but legitimate is absolutely ridiculous. And further, one of the other guys here, Berman, says, wait, the conspiracy theorists think that Mateen was working for the FBI. So the FBI wanted him to carry out an attack that would cast them in a bad light for interviewing this man multiple times and failing to stop him.
So I just pulled up Occam's razor was a problem-solving principle attributed to William of Occam from like the late 1200s. His principle can be interpreted as, quote, among competing hypotheses, the one with the fewest assumptions should be selected.
That's it. Thank you for clarifying. Much better than my terrible recollection of what it was.
Yeah, so the one basically where you have to, you know, assume the fewest things.
Right, so let's compare. You've got our caller who is assuming all kinds of things. He's assuming his friend who claimed to be a crisis actor is telling him the truth, and he's assumed all the, you know, the beliefs.
He's assuming that all of the hospital workers
were in on it.
Were in on something. And now I do know for a fact that there are drills,
yeah,
where, you know, they have crisis act of we're going to simulate an accident, but it's, yeah, never people that are dead. It's we're simulating that there was a car accident or a chemical spill, and we just want to make sure that the communications are working properly so, yeah, that if there is an actual accident, that, you know, the hospital gets notified correctly and this group gets notified, right, and people can respond in an appropriate time.
Yeah, it's a public training exercise,
yes,
basically, is what that is.
Those things actually do happen.
Yeah.
But again, it's not this sort of scale, and it never winds up being reported in the media of there were 117 billion people that got killed yesterday, yeah, by an exploding squirrel.
So he's assuming that all the hospital workers, all the nightclub workers, all the nightclub attendees, everybody who was, you know,
all
within,
of the news reporters.
Yeah, everybody is in on this, all law enforcement. And it's just absolutely, you know, patently obvious that that's not the case. Whereas the person who is saying, is taking people at their word, the hundreds of people who were there and witnessed this horrific violence, the people who had family members dying, you're not, I mean, it would be impossible to assume that those people are all lying. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. There's more coming up here. 855-450-FREE.
A funny thing happens when you don't advertise. Nothing. Modern advertisers have been trained to look for trackability in their advertising, and web search ads are great for that. They also help you get the consumer that's looking for products like yours in the moment. But they're expensive, and they do nothing to convince people to try your product segment in the first place. They help you get a bigger piece of the pie, but branding mediums like radio grow the pie itself. Free Talk Live's on more than 150 stations, and we can help advertisers with little budgets and big ones. Send me an email, mark@freetalklive.com. It's mark@freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live, dial on in toll free. Take control of the airwaves, bring up whatever's on your mind. Our number here, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And you can Skype into the show at Skype username lrn.fm. With you tonight, Ian here.
Chris.
And Daryl.
Coming up, big time virus / malware infection around the globe. Apparently, it's making headlines. Ransomware is in the news. What is ostensibly the largest ransomware strike in the history of man, in the history of the internet, is happening now thanks to the NSA and their leaked malware. We'll tell you more about that coming up here in moments. And this is going to mean Bitcoin's in the news. Will that drive the price up? Or will it drive it down? We'll continue with that coming up here, and you can share your calls and thoughts with us. By the way, if you want to save big time on your purchases at Amazon, just go to saveitpurse.com. You can save easily 20% or more or less. It's up to you what percentage you want to save. And the longer, the harder, the higher the number that you want to save, the longer it may take to actually get the savings. But so, for instance, I put one at like 29% the other day, and it hasn't. Nobody's taken a bite on that one yet, but I'm not in a rush, so I don't really need it urgently, and so I'm trying the higher percentages before I lower the price and try lower. This has been working very well for me, and generally I'll save 20 to 25% on pretty much everything that I buy through saveitpurse.com, and whenever I need something from Amazon, this is the way that I do it. Save at purse, saveatpurse.com. You go there. You do need to use cryptocurrency, though. That's the key. They will not accept dollars or other fiat currencies at saveatpurse.com. You have to use crypto like Bitcoin in order to get these amazing discounts. Saveatpurse.com. Saveatpurse.com. To the phones, to the fun. Let's go to Stefan. He's in Ohio. Hello, Stefan.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, what's on your mind?
I was listening to the last caller, and I wanted to point something out. You made it seem like, I understand how crazy it sounds that some of these shootings can be fake, but in the instances where we actually have videos, I have called to question before. You
Which
may remember.
Which instances do we have videos?
We have instances of video with the young girl that apparently killed her instructor with an Uzi, and we have two videos of
That's
the
a
man.
New one.
That
I haven't heard this one. When was this?
It's actually quite an old story. It's about 2 years ago. There's also two videos of the shooting in Virginia. The one in Virginia.
Which shooting in Virginia?
The one that apparently happened on live TV.
Well, was that the one that the reporter got killed on
the live show? Heck.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's two videos of that. One that was apparently recorded by the news, and another one that was recorded by the shooter itself. Mm-hmm. And there are a few things that are questionable. I'm not going to say one way or the other whether it was fake or not, but you'll notice that the gun has no shells coming out of it, and the woman somehow manages to walk away with four shots in her body. And nobody noticed this guy walking up, despite the fact he was in clear sight.
Yeah, I don't remember all of the claims from when that happened, but we heard a lot of this stuff get dragged out back when this happened, and it was, you know, just as absurd, but not quite to the same level, because the Pulse nightclub shooting involves hundreds of people, and this one only involves like three people.
Right, and also, you know, this woman that wound up getting shot, or as you say, allegedly getting shot, she was a professional journalist who was doing a live broadcast on location.
That's right.
Professional journalists who do live broadcast on location are trained to not pay attention to what's happening around them.
Otherwise, they'll be distracted.
They're there to record video for television. And if you get distracted by everybody that walks by you, then you're never going to wind up getting your shot. So I can see how someone would be able to walk up on her.
Yeah, and you also understand that cell phone video frequently, again, I haven't seen the footage in quite a long time, so this is not, you know, a fresh story in any way. But cell phone video can frequently have very low frame rates.
Yes.
And so it's very well possible that, you know, the shells were being ejected from the gun. It's just that those frames didn't end up in the video that was recorded. So, again, just seems, you know, on its face to be pretty ridiculous claims. But certainly, at least with a situation involving a few people on a relatively abandoned dock, you at the very least have the benefit of being able to claim that it's possible that, you know, all three of them were in on it or
right.
or whatever. And so are you saying that you're not saying you necessarily subscribe to this these
I
beliefs?
I don't subscribe to it. I just saw some of the artifacts in the video that some people have used to try to claim it's fake. I
so
don't
they're,
think
they're,
it
those people are claiming that the woman was not actually shot and killed and that she was, what, sent off
oh,
to
no,
some
she,
kind of island
dead.
Somewhere?
She's dead. She's dead.
Okay, but I'm not asking what you believe, or do you think the people are saying that the whole thing was fake, and so therefore she's still alive?
A lot of people have said that, yes, that she's still alive.
It's
I don't think
ridiculous.
A family. Yeah, I agree. But my original topic I was going to call in about, Jeff Sessions is apparently going to push for mandatory minimums mm-hmm. on all drug sentencing.
He is pushing, according to, I actually had this in show prep for tonight, Washington Post, Attorney General Jeff Sessions overturning the sweeping criminal charging policy of the former Attorney General Eric Holder and directed his federal prosecutors Thursday to charge defendants with the most serious provable crimes carrying the most severe penalties. In a speech today, he said the move was meant to ensure that prosecutors would be, quote, unhandcuffed and not micromanaged from Washington, unquote, as they work to bring the most significant cases possible. He said, now, by the way,
I wonder how he's going to do this and still comply with the most recent spending bill where the DOJ was allocated the grand total of $0 to prosecute cannabis cases
that was
in
for
states
medical.
With recreational or medical.
I thought that was medical only.
Recreation or medical.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Well, maybe he's talking about the other drugs, Daryl. He's talking about enforcing this on the bad, you know, the big bad drug dealers.
Well, he
selling
claims
heroin.
That marijuana is only quote unquote slightly safer than heroin.
Yeah, Sessions came out and said that the opioid and heroin epidemic is a contributor to the recent surge in violent crime in America, which to me makes no sense because violent crime has been declining for decades.
So what's funny here is that he's directing them to charge defendants with the most serious of crimes carrying the most severe penalties and then says that that's not micromanagement? Well, wait a minute. Not micromanaging them would be to allow them to decide what to charge people with.
See, what he's calling micromanaging is Congress telling him that he's not allowed to do something.
I see. He says, quote, we are returning to the enforcement of the laws passed by Congress, plain and simple. If you're a drug trafficker, we will not look the other way. We will not be willfully blind to your misconduct. Unquote. The Holder memo issued in 2013 instructed his prosecutors to avoid charging certain defendants with drug offenses that would trigger long mandatory minimum sentences. Defendants who met a set of criteria, such as not belonging to a drug trafficking organization, gang, or cartel, qualified for those lesser charges and, in turn, less prison time under Holder's policy. So Sessions' new policy is wiping that out. Outlined in a two-page memo and sent to more than 5,000 assistant U.S. attorneys across the country. Your thoughts on that, Stefan?
I think that his idea of trying to have bigger punishments for people that are abusing drugs and then saying, oh, if you're not a part of a big drug ring, you get a lesser sentence. What happens when they start accusing people of being a part of a drug ring even if they weren't?
Well, that's what they're going to do. They're just going to everybody that – well, obviously he was part of a big drug ring. Otherwise, we wouldn't have arrested him.
Everybody who has any kind of illegal drug is part of a huge drug ring under their logic. So that doesn't even make sense to me.
Right. I remember seeing one of these, you know, don't do drug things where they were saying if you buy any drug, you're funding the terrorist.
Well, right. Just to be clear, something you said was incorrect, and I don't know if you intended to say this, Stefan, but they're not targeting drug abusers. They're targeting drug dealers. The average drug user or abuser does not get targeted by the federal government for arrest. That's usually the local cops that collar those guys. Hey, thanks for the call tonight. I appreciate hearing from you. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. Here's a quote from Sessions. He says, drug trafficking is an inherently dangerous and violent business. If you want to collect a drug debt, you can't file a lawsuit in court. You collect it with the barrel of a gun.
That's why we need to end the damn drug war, you crazy man.
The reason why drug trafficking is dangerous is because of your war on drugs that drives it into the black market. Thanks to Prohibition, there's more coming up. It's Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. You can bring up what you want. Our number here is 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. We got some tech-related news that may be hitting your home. Hopefully not. But malware released by the NSA is now infecting systems and bringing up ransomware, which is holding people's computers hostage in return for Bitcoin payments. We can tell you more about that coming up here in moments. With you tonight, it's Ian,
Chris,
and Daryl.
Don't forget, you can Skype in to join us at Skype username lrn.fm. As we continue, we'll take your calls and thoughts about whatever's on your mind. So let's go to the phones and to the fun. Bonnie is on the line in Utah. You're on Free Talk Live. Hello, Bonnie.
Hi, this is Bonnie. So what I wanted to talk about was, like, it's related to, like, the conspiracy theories and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think that all of those ones that the people have been calling in talking about today, even if there is a little bit of truth to it, I think it's to, like, distract from the main big conspiracy that is basically just that the state doesn't actually have our interests in mind. Like, like Murray Rothbard in Anatomy of the State, he says that the state is basically what used to be just like thieves and barbarians or whatever. They just organized and decided this is the easier way to steal and stuff like that. So isn't that like a conspiracy theory? And I feel like that's just to distract people.
Yeah, okay. Now, that's an interesting point, because I think you're going to find a lot of agreement with the viewpoint that the state is essentially a criminal gang. And I don't know how many of the people within the state think of themselves that way. So I think that there are probably some people who do realize that about what they're doing within the state, and who absolutely, you know, understand that they're using criminal violence against people to achieve what they want. But I don't know what percentage of them are like that. Some of them believe they're doing the right thing.
Yeah. Is it conspiracy, or is that just the reality, right? Because they don't necessarily have to conspire to do that in order to work together to do that, right?
Well, like at the lower levels, like I live on a military base that's mostly civilians. Obviously, they don't think, oh, I'm just being evil. Like, they think that they have completely been, like, brainwashed, that they're all for the public good.
Right.
And it's just like, I don't know where it would start or anything. But, like, one thing I put on the topic suggestions was about Jed Weiss, the McAfee's VP, how he came on Tom Woods' show yesterday or the day before.
Yeah.
And he was saying all this stuff about the Libertarian Party. He was saying, like, that they were basically taking money and using it for just, like, making money for themselves and stuff like that. And I even, like, donated $15. I'm 20 years old, and, like, that's what got me into, like, libertarianism. And I could totally see other people my age being like, well, this is all a big crap show. This is, like, totally a conspiracy.
So what was it that got you in, because, you know, you're pretty young. A lot of young people don't get involved in politics. What was it that kind of turned you on to it? Was it one of the political campaigns within the Libertarian Party? Was it Judd's campaign, or was it McAfee, or was it the Gary Johnson side?
Well, I was, like, raised totally conservative, and I basically would argue with my sister about how Bernie Sanders was wrong. And one of my best friends would be, like, on my side, but he was saying all this stuff I didn't know about. And I was like, what? How do you get this information? And he's a libertarian, and he basically showed me, like, the Mises Institute and C. And I've just found everything, like, your show all by myself and, you know, YouTube and reading and stuff like that. But but Gary Johnson was like, I was like, oh my gosh, it was the same exact time, like probably January of 2016. I was just like, wow, this is like a person we can get behind, and he actually has a shot of like winning, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
Well, it was her first election, so yeah. You can forgive someone.
All right, yeah.
He had a shot at making a lot of money for Ron Nilsen, and that's what he did.
Who's that, his campaign manager?
Ron Nilsen was the advisor that wound up getting somewhere around 60% of all of the donations that went to the Johnson-Weld 2016 campaign.
Now, was that some of what Judd Weiss has been kind of revealing as some of the backroom dirty deals?
Possibly. I've not listened to the Tom Woods podcast. I have it downloaded, and I just sent it to my phone, gotcha. So I'll listen tomorrow.
Yeah, I saw Judd over at in Acapulco. Of course, he's taking some great looking pictures. He's like the Liberty photographer of note. Him and Tennyson, they're both really good. But I always like to catch up with him. And he and the McAfee campaign had a really good campaign.
Yes.
Yours also, Daryl, was excellent. It's a shame that we didn't have a more principled libertarian involved. But I'm glad to hear that Gary Johnson did bring people in to the movement, and you stuck around and you've learned more, because anybody who just listened to Gary Johnson wouldn't understand what libertarianism is.
I was going to say, she sounds like way more knowledgeable than somebody who's just a Gary Johnson supporter.
Right.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, Bonnie. Anything else you want to share tonight?
Not really. That's mainly what I wanted to bring up, was the Judd Weiss interview.
All right. I appreciate your call. And thanks for submitting that, by the way, to freetalklive.com. You mentioned that, and I appreciate it. And there's a few like core submitters over there who keep putting fresh content up, so I appreciate that, too.
And for people that aren't familiar with that, that's a Reddit-integrated system?
Correct. So if you go to freetalklive.com, the front page of our site has a bunch of features. We got a webcam, we got archives, we got live streaming, got a list of our radio affiliates, all kinds of content there. But there's also the front page, which you get to actually influence. You get to submit content there. And so if you see a news story, for instance, that you like, and you want our other listeners to see that story, and possibly us as hosts to see the story, you submit it there to the front page of the site via the Reddit-based system. So you do have to have a free Reddit account, and it's pretty easy to link your Free Talk Live account with your Reddit account. And so then once you go to the front page, you want to hit submit, you can just send your story in there. If you want to use the Reddit version too, you can go to reddit.com/r/freetalklive, and then you can use it that way if you prefer it that way. But that's a place I check every day to see if there's something fresh that I'm interested in talking about on the air. And so other listeners benefit from being able to see what's there. And you get to vote on what the other listeners submit. So I submitted something actually earlier today about New Hampshire having 74% of the Senate vote in favor of cannabis.
Oh, is that the
decriminalization?
Numbers?
That's correct. It was 17-6. So an overwhelming vote.
Yeah.
Finally.
Yes.
After they voted it down again and again over the last decade, they had
the amendment to the bill, because the bill that came out of the House would have removed criminal penalties for the first three convictions of possession of up to 1 ounce.
Mm-hmm.
The amendment, which lowered that to 3/4 of an ounce, actually had one more vote than the bill as amended.
Meaning the amendment itself passed with one higher vote, and then somebody flipped their vote on the whole thing.
Correct. So yeah. Sharon Carson, who's the anti-drug, like she's
a prohibitionist.
The big prohibitionist, yeah. She voted for the amendment, but against the bill as amended.
I just felt like I was surprised that she voted for that amendment. I figured that it was a mistake on her part. But, as you pointed out, she ended up voting against the bill. But it didn't matter because it won overwhelmingly, which was nice. After the New Hampshire State House passed it with 90%, 89.8%.
The regional director for the Marijuana Policy Project, he speculates that she voted for the amendment so that it weakened the bill.
Took it from an ounce to 3/4
right.
of an ounce. I see.
I'm wondering, and this is definitely speculation on my part and not something that I necessarily expect her to do, but I'm wondering if she's doing this so that she can then play both sides of the issue of, well, I voted for the amendment.
could be.
I'm not a prohibition. Once she winds up seeing an opinion poll of 75% of New Hampshireites want to legalize and remove all criminal penalties from cannabis. Well, I voted for the amendment.
There was some stupid stuff said by some of the prohibitionists during that floor hearing, and that
yeah,
video
I was
is
watching
up now.
The video yesterday. There was one of the guys that said, "Well, if you can have up to 3/4 of an ounce, then wouldn't a drug dealer just wind up getting 6 of his buddies to sit in a car with him, and then they all have 3/4 of an ounce? What size car are you driving around in?" Where you can just have 6 of your buddies sitting there to carry 3/4 of an ounce
so
to
dumb.
Go to a drug deal.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I mean, so some of that I caught on video. I mean, you were watching the feed that was live from the cam that the state has in there. I had actually gone down there to try to record the whole hearing,
right.
And they did it earlier than I was expecting.
Yeah, they skipped order, and it took them a lot. Less time to get to that.
Yeah, so
than
I only got half
thought
of
it would.
It. I only got half of it on my videos. You can see that over at freekeen.com. That video's up now.
Well, luckily the state archives their live stream.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yes.
All right. That is good. That is good to know. The toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. But it was nice to see, bipartisan support for decriminalizing cannabis, and nice to see the governor coming out same day with a press release saying he's going to sign it. So, good news. There's more coming up here. Hour 3 is on the way. This is Free Talk Live. You can join us.
So the protection of life, liberty, and property is what the Free State Project is all about. But it's an effort to move 20,000 people who understand.
It's about demonstrating to the entire country
that, we can have a free market, a truly free market.
Making it just a freer, great place to live.
It's the world's largest voluntarist libertarian community, and it's only getting bigger.
That's amazing, to be able to move to a place where other people like passionately believe in being free and independent.
What the Free State Project is managing to do, though, is to put their money where their mouth is. Physically getting up across the country and saying, let's go someplace and let's demonstrate the power of these ideas. There's a lot of kind of philosophy that surrounds liberty. There's a lot of thinking about it and talking about it. But here in New Hampshire, people are doing it.
101 Reasons Liberty Lives in New Hampshire, a documentary by Free State Project Early Movers. Watch it free at 101ReasonsFilm.com. 101ReasonsFilm.com.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. We invite you to join us on the radio. You can take control of the airwaves. You can bring up anything that's on your mind. And with you in the studio tonight, it's Ian,
Chris,
and Daryl.
We've got Skype, so Skype on in here and join us at Skype username lrn.fm. And still to come, we want to talk about what's happened with some of the NSA malware that had leaked out a little while back. The Intercept has the story. Apparently, the largest breakout of ransomware in history is happening as we speak, and that is not good, and it probably is not going to be good for Bitcoin in the public eye. We'll tell you about that here in a moment, but we're going to continue with your calls and thoughts first. So we go to the phones and to the fun. Patrick in Bullhead City, you're on Free Talk Live. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, guys. Can you hear me today?
Yes. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I got a serious situation that's been coming up a lot, and it's got to do with the pharmacies, how the state and government are going after the smaller pharmacies. They're shutting down because of the pain management systems, and they're really getting really strong-footed on them. The law states that it's a felony if you threaten a pharmacist. But a doctor, it's a misdemeanor, which I think is totally unfair because they're literally more vulnerable in an office, you know?
All right, so before you delve too far into this, I've heard the term pain management something another, but I'm not intimately familiar with what it actually is. Can
it's
you explain that real quick?
Okay. Your different doctors and your different doctor associations, they don't want to deal with pain management, arthritis, people with chronic pain, okay.
Okay.
In other words, real thing. So they refer you to these pain management clinics, of which you have to go up there, sign a contract, which means you have to be UA'd. They monitor you. You have to literally, in order to get your pills, you got to go up there once a month and get a prescription from them. And then every 3 months, you got to go in for a checkup, regardless of what the situation is. You have to follow the contract. So they pretty much have a monopoly on the pain management system. And usually it, most a lot out here, it's mostly seniors, you know, people who have arthritis. You know, the doctors won't touch them because they're too old to do the operations. And
right. And a lot of this, if I understand correctly, is under the guise of we have to prevent people from getting addicted to opioids.
Yeah, but that's all they prescribe most of the time. That's what's funny. But anyway, what's happening now is a lot of the people that are going to these doctors and pharmacists are going down to the pharmacy. The pharmacies are only allotted per county so many patients. In other words, opiates are distributed upon population and different things. So a lot of times you'll go into the pharmacy and they don't have, say, the Percocets or the Oxys or whatever they got them on, down to the minor stuff, which technically is still in that class because it has some form of a opiate or synthetic opiate. And what's been happening is people are getting 86th from the pharmacies because the pharmacist can call the, if he doesn't like you or if you have any questions to him, they don't hesitate in calling the police, and we have to go out there, and you got a 75-year-old little nice lady who doesn't know what's going on because she's just there to pick up her prescription, and you're having to 86 this person.
What's that mean?
In other words, you're telling them it's a no trespass. You're giving them a warning that you're being...
You've got to remove them from the facility.
So let me see if I'm following this. So an old lady goes into the pharmacy to try to fill a prescription. They tell her, we're out. We can't give you any more pills. You got to go somewhere else. She gets upset, and then they call you in. Is that what's happened?
Well, that's been happening quite often, more so than there. But the sad part is so they go to the neighborhood pharmacies, which are more friendlier. They know your name. We just recently had one closed. I mean, just literally a sign on the window saying we're closed, no explanation or anything else. And it's been happening a lot. And so these people don't know where to go to get their scripts. And it's really turning into a total monopoly. I mean, the FDA has really just got such a heavy hand on this that it's scary because, I mean, it's becoming an epidemic in smaller communities because we don't have the options like a lot of the bigger cities do, you know, where you have a drugstore on every corner, you know.
Yeah, and it's the FDA and the DEA who are causing the problems here. Patrick, thank you for the call tonight. I appreciate it. And once again, we're back to partial prohibition. We were talking about drug prohibition earlier, but we were talking about prohibition of illegal drugs. These drugs are semi-illegal in that if you have a piece of paper from a doctor, it's totally fine for you to have it. But if you don't, then it's just as illegal as possessing any other drug.
Right. And we were talking earlier about the live stream of the New Hampshire Senate, and there was a bill that they heard at some point yesterday on exempting veterinarians from this pain management reporting something.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the senators stood up and made the claim that he read in some newspapers somewhere that people are injuring their pets and taking the pets to the veterinarian and getting opiates prescribed for the pet. And, you know, we have to include vets because of this. And then another senator stood up and said, I've actually got some friends that are veterinarians, and every time you walk into their office for one of these checkups for an injured animal, you're walking out with a bill of at least $350.
Yeah.
So why would somebody that just wants to get, you know, a few pills of opiates
pay that much? You
pay $350 for what they can go on the street corner and get for $10.
They're at most $20 a pill. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
United States is becoming more and more like a lot of these, I don't want to say third world countries, but a lot of other countries where you just can't get pain meds. They just don't. They're just so harsh on drugs and cracking down on like illegal drugs.
Well, somebody's getting them because they're out there. I mean,
it's severely they come down on the distribution of legal drugs.
Oh, no doubt.
Legally,
it's
in
hard
order to
get.
Crack down right. on and the illegal distribution.
The
and
last
it's
time,
just and then the people who actually need the pain meds can't get them.
Yes,
and it's not just pain meds. The last time I went to go buy some Sudafed, and that was probably 5-6 years ago.
They ID you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've got, snot running out of my nose, and I just look like hell, and I have a box of Sudafed, and the, 17-year-old girl, she's like, I need to see your ID. And I'm like, for what? To make sure you're not going to make meth? And I was like, how does you looking at my ID prove that I'm not going to make meth? You see right. snot running out of my nose, and I'm sneezing, and what?
And you know what's really messed up about that is the law doesn't even say they have to check ID. It says something else. It says, I forget exactly what it says, but it says something like...
No, in Texas, where I was, she had to write it down on a piece of paper.
Yeah. But was that in the name, law? Because I...
Yes,
okay, so I might be thinking of New Jersey. So again, yeah, I mean, there's different laws in different places, I suppose, on this one. But I remember, the law doesn't even say they have to take ID. And yet, that's what everybody does because they want to make sure that they comply with the law, and they have no real means of doing it.
This woman had to write my name, my address, my ID number,
and it goes
birth
into a
date,
database.
And it goes into a database. Yeah. And if I buy more than X number of boxes of Sudafed, then I'm a meth dealer.
Hold on. Are you sure that that is a state law, or are we talking about something that's federal? Because I would seem.
I think this is state by
is
state.
It state?
It
All
must right. be, because it's not. His explanation is different than what I remember the law.
The toll free number
anyway.
Here is 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. You want to talk about the Sudafed law? Let us know. It's Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live. You can dial toll free. You can bring up anything you want. Our number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And the Skype username is lrn.fm. With you tonight, it's Ian.
Chris.
And Daryl.
Also, did you know your body contains a second brain? That's what scientists call your intestines. And it's because today they know the bacteria or probiotics in your intestines are the catalyst for sending signals to your brain. Unfortunately, due to poor eating habits, most Americans have an unhealthy gut. And this is contributing to a whole host of problems. An unhealthy gut has been linked to everything from anxiety and depression to chronic inflammation and weight gain. In short, a daily probiotic supplement is no longer essential just for building your immune system. It's also important to combat moodiness, maintain energy, and help with weight loss. And with Whole Food Multicomplete, it's easy because they include a blend of 8 strains of live probiotics with your daily vitamin minerals. That they also include digestive enzymes and antioxidant herbs. In fact, for 15 years, Whole Food Multicomplete is the only product that incorporates 7 families of nutrients into a single product. It is the perfect product for the health-conscious consumer who understands they need more than just vitamins and minerals, but don't want to break the bank buying 5 or 6 different products every month. So, go and get yours with 30% off for your first order with coupon code FTL. That's coupon code FTL like Free Talk Live. You go over to simplifymysupplements.com. They're knocking off pretty much all their profit, from what I understand, with that code, just to get you to try it out, to see what you think about it. It's code FTL over at simplifymysupplements.com. They do accept Bitcoin, and if you want to get the discount on your Bitcoin order, you can contact them through the website, plus free shipping on orders over $60.
So I've done some research on the ephedrine. ID requirements, and these do vary state by state.
Okay,
and
interesting.
They vary drastically. The National Alliance for Model State Drug Laws has the list. And Chris, you're correct. In New Jersey, there is no requirement that the purchaser produce identification. In Texas, where I had to produce identification, this thing says that if there's no valid prescription, the purchaser must produce identification, that the business is required to document the identification.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And again, you're not allowed to sell more than a certain amount in a day, more than 3.6 grams of ephedrine per day, more than 9 grams per 30-day period. Minimum age is 16 to purchase these things, and there's a lot of other super strict requirements here.
Well, that must have eliminated the production of methamphetamine in all of those places.
Very greatly state by state.
So methamphetamine is obviously, you know, in the states where there are heavier restrictions, there must be less or fewer meth busts, right?
Yeah, certainly, yeah, yeah.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
Not because any serious producer of methamphetamine is not going to buy Sudafed. That's not
right.
How they're doing it.
New Mexico. Let's look at New Mexico, because that's where Breaking Bad is set.
That's right, that's right.
And, you know, what was he doing? Making meth. Well, in New Mexico, if you don't have a prescription for ephedrine or pseudoephedrine, you must produce proper identification.
Mm-hmm.
A pharmacy's principal place of business must wind up obtaining and keeping these records, and there's a bunch of other things in here. The purchaser must sign a log after reading the purchaser statement for pseudoephedrine receipt or other program or mechanism indicating the date and time of the transaction, the name and address of the person's driver's license number or other government ID number, the names of the pharmacist intern or pharmacy technician conducting the transaction, and the product sold and the total quantity.
What? That's what they're writing down in New Mexico,
and that's what the purchaser has to. So I go in to, you know, the CVS or the Rite Aid or the mom and pop pharmacy and buy a box of Sudafed. I show them my ID. They write all the stuff, and then I have to sign. I am who I say I am. Here's my ID.
Under penalties
and
of perjury, I buy this box of Sudafed
I purchased.
Let's go to your calls and thoughts here and talk to Mark in Salt Lake City, listening online. Hello, Mark.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Hey, great. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I was going to talk about this. I called you guys to talk about the cyber attack that's happened.
Yeah.
And it still happens.
Uh-oh. We have got a terrible connection right now. I'm hoping that it clears up. I don't know.
Hold on. Is this better?
So far it is.
Better?
Go ahead.
All right. Yeah. Sometimes on speakerphone, it works better. Okay, so I just wanted to tell you, if you guys are interested in seeing how this thing is spreading, there is a website that you can visit.
Really?
Infected?
It's done by Intel. It's intel.malwaretech.com/pewpew.
Oh, yeah.
8.html. Full spectrum cyber pewpew.
P-E-W-P-E-W? Intel.malwaretech.com/pewpew.
.html.
Okay.
Yes.
Pew, pew, pew.
And it's really cool because it starts off with no attack, then you connect, and then you actually watch the attacks happen in real time.
That's
really
interesting.
Insane.
So
yeah.
I wonder if going to the site winds up creating the attacks.
It could, but I'm on an iMac, so I guess maybe safe.
Wait, are you saying that Intel is behind the... what do you mean, creating the attacks? What do you mean by that?
So, you know, people go to this website to be like, where are these attacks? But by visiting the website, it's actually creating sort of like the DDoS sort of thing of, you know, like using the IoTs sort of whatever.
This isn't a DDoS that I understand. I mean, I haven't read much about it, but I understand this is a ransomware infection. Mark, have you been following this case? Because I haven't even, you know, I just barely learned about this tonight on the show.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. I mean, it's just like a late-breaking news story. So all I know is that this ransomware actually came out of the Eternal Blue code that from the CIA that was released in Vault 7. But it's been renamed, but it's the same thing as the Eternal Blue.
What's the exploit? I mean, is there some sort of exploit that they're exploiting, I'm assuming?
Yes, it's an exploit that came out of the CIA.
Okay, so but how does it actually infect the user? Is it a browser exploit? Is it an operating system exploit? Is it Intel management firmware exploit?
I haven't really dug too far into it. That might be something I'll have to dig into further, but I don't have time to really do it right now.
Hey, so. Mark, thanks but for I'm the not, call, man. Yeah. We'll look deeper into this here coming up, and I appreciate the heads up. We actually do take requests here on Free Talk Live, so we'll jump into this topic. Thank you. I appreciate it. Story from TheIntercept.com. An arsenal of powerful software tools designed by the NSA to infect and control Windows computers was leaked by an entity known only as the Shadow Brokers. Not even a whole month later, the hypothetical threat that criminals would use the tools against the general public has now become real, and tens of thousands of computers worldwide are now crippled by an unknown party demanding ransom. The malware worm taking over the computers goes by the names WannaCry or WannaDecryptor.
PDF exploit, I think.
It spreads from machine to machine silently and remains invisible to users until it unveils itself as so-called ransomware, telling users that all of their files have been encrypted with a key known only to the attacker, and they will be locked out until they pay $300 worth of Bitcoin to an anonymous party. We'll continue. It's Free Talk Live. Ross Ulbricht was convicted in early 2015 of running the infamous Silk Road Underground Market. The Silk Road was a gift to humanity and helped reduce the harms brought on by drug prohibition. For this good deed, Ross has been sentenced to life in prison with no possibility of parole. Now, an appeal is Ross's only chance, and he needs your support. Please visit FreeRoss.org, where you can contribute via various methods, including Bitcoin. Visit FreeRoss.org. That's FreeRoss.org. This is Free Talk Live. Bitcoin price down throughout the day today. We just pulled that up according to Bitcoin Average. Global price right now about $1,682. That's down from over $1,800 just 24 hours ago. Yeah. So the price has been dropping pretty dramatically, perhaps on the bad news about the leaked malware that had come out from the NSA. That has now been repurposed into a ransomware infection that is popping up all around the globe in what is being called the largest ransomware strike that has ever happened in the history of the internet. And for folks that don't know what ransomware is, and there's different versions of types of ransomware out there, but they all share kind of the similar idea that they lock down your computer's files and your operating system and basically displays a nasty message saying, well, we're locking you down. You can't use your computer and access any of your files because they're now encrypted. We have the key. We will decrypt your files if you just go ahead and send $300 worth of Bitcoin. In this case, it's asking for $300. There's a guy here in Keene, New Hampshire, that got hit by ransomware, and they demanded $2,000 worth of Bitcoin from him. Oh, and yeah. He didn't have an offsite backup that he could access in any amount of decent amount of time, or I don't think he even had one at all. And so he had to pay. And he did pay, and sometimes when you pay, they actually do unlock it, but they don't always, because they know that if you paid once, you might pay again, so why not just keep the software there and then ask for the next payment? According to this story over at TheIntercept.com, they're locking computers down asking for $300, but the price then rises to $600 after a few days. After 7 days, if no ransom is paid, the hacker will make the data permanently inaccessible. And there is a countdown clock so victims can see how much time they have left. Ransomware isn't new. For victims, such an attack is normally a colossal headache. But today's vicious outbreak has spread ransomware on a massive scale, hitting not just home computers, but reportedly healthcare, communications infrastructure, logistics, and government entities. Reuters said that, quote, hospitals across England reported the cyber attack was causing huge problems to their services, and the public in areas affected were being advised to only seek medical care for emergencies, and that, quote, the attack had affected X-ray imaging systems, pathology test results, phone systems and patient administration systems.
If this doesn't, you know, cause you to double think or triple think this whole Internet of Things, then I don't know what will. I know a lot of people started questioning it after the DDoS attack that happened back in, what was it, September, October,
where coffee makers were being
Makers and toasters and light bulbs and all of these weird Internet of Targets devices were part of this DDoS thing. And now they're saying X-ray machine. Why the hell do you need an X-ray machine hooked up to internet?
You know, it wouldn't even be so bad if we actually had secure software, but we don't write software
securely.
Do you
know what the S in IoT stands for? The S stands for security, but there is no S in IoT. Do you know what the P stands for? Privacy, but there is no P in IoT.
Did you get that from Brian Sovereign?
I did.
Okay.
That was pretty funny.
Credit where credit is due.
Woo! It's his birthday today, by the way.
Oh, is it? Well, happy birthday, Brian Sovereign from Sovereign Tech. Great show. Great podcast for people that are into the tech world. I'm sure he's going to cover
co-host of Free Talk Live.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to cover this in detail.
I'm fairly certain he will.
The worm also has reportedly reached universities, a major Spanish telecom, FedEx, and the Russian Interior Ministry. In total, researchers have detected the WannaCry infections in over 57,000 computers, over 70 countries, and now counting.
Hold on. This thing is attacking the Russians, but I thought the Russians were the ones that released this.
Oh, they're just attacking themselves to fool you into thinking that it wasn't them.
You know, I went to that website that the guy told us about, the Intel malware something pew pew, and I noticed that there's no pings coming out of North Korea.
Oh, it must
be Kim Jong. The conspiracy theorist inside of me says that that's proof that Kim Jong-un is behind this.
According to experts tracking and analyzing the worm and its spread, this could be one of the worst ever recorded attacks of its kind. Security researcher who tweets and blogs as Malware Tech told The Intercept, quote, "I've never seen anything like this with ransomware. The last worm of this degree that I can remember is Conficker. Conficker was a notorious Windows worm spotted in 2008, which went on to infect over 9 million computers in nearly 200 countries. Most importantly, unlike previous massively replicating computer worms and ransomware infections, today's ongoing WannaCry attack appears to be based on an attack developed by the NSA, codenamed Eternal Blue. The U.S. software weapon would have allowed the spy agency's hackers to break into potentially millions of Windows computers by exploiting a flaw in how certain versions of Windows implemented a network protocol commonly used to share files and to print. Even though Microsoft fixed this vulnerability in a March software update, the safety provided there relied on computer users keeping their systems current with the most recent updates." So, a lot of, you know, hospitals, industry tends to be very bad at keeping their systems up to date. They're like, oh, well, this is working. Why do we need to, you know, update?
Well, and part of it is if you've got, you know, critical machinery that you can't, you know, take offline
or easily
for a couple of hours to get updates, then, you know, it might not be the easiest thing to update the respirator that for some reason is hooked up to the internet.
You know, they can do live updates too. I don't know about Windows systems, but I know there's live updates on other operating systems. So you don't even have to reboot the system to take it down.
Yeah, Windows systems still require reboots frequently.
Yes.
Mine's scheduled for a reboot tonight.
And Chris Reitman, our Thursday night co-host last week, remember, he came in and he was talking about, oh, yeah, my computer's been installing this update for 19 hours and I can't use my computer.
He was exaggerating a little bit, but it was taking quite a long time.
That surpasses my record of installing HP printer drivers on a Windows machine.
The article that I have from the Washington Post also mentions that this flaw is only targeting Microsoft software.
Wait, I thought it was PDFs. Isn't it a PDF exploit?
I haven't seen anything about that, so
I might be thinking of a different, something else that I was reading. So maybe it wasn't the same. But I thought it was a some sort of PDF.
It's saying
exploit.
It's spreading over network connections, so I don't know if it's initiated by.
Maybe it's exclusive to Windows.
That's what they're saying here.
But
that
it's
they are
in a
targeting
PDF
Windows. There's nothing here about a PDF, but
okay.
I don't know
if
that
means
shadow
brokers may have released something about a PDF, and they do mention shadow brokers.
Okay.
But they had a whole bunch of tools. I mean,
right.
The NSA had a bunch of tools, and this is one of them. So And now, as pointed out here at The Intercept, has always been the case, many people, including the government, aren't installing updates, and therefore, or before, there would have been some solace in knowing that only enemies of the NSA would have to fear having Eternal Blue used against them. But from the moment the agency lost control of its own exploit last summer, there's been no such assurance. Today shows exactly what's at stake when government hackers can't keep their virtual weapons locked up. As security researcher Matthew Hickey, who tracked the leaked NSA tools last month, put it, quote, "I'm actually surprised that a weaponized malware of this nature didn't spread sooner. The infection will surely reignite arguments over what's known as the vulnerability equity process, the decision-making procedure used to decide whether the NSA should use a security weakness it discovers for itself and keep it secret, or share it with the affected companies so they can protect their customers." Christopher Parsons, a researcher in Toronto at their Citizen Lab, told The Intercept, quote, "Today's ransomware attack is being made possible because of the past work undertaken by the NSA. Ideally, it would lead to more disclosures that would improve the security of devices globally." So that they're saying here, if the NSA hadn't kept this a secret, if the NSA had informed Microsoft of the vulnerability, then this could have been patched a year ago. But no, they kept it quiet. Or could have been patched years ago.
You know, there's a second problem, though. Even when this kind of stuff is revealed to a lot of these companies like Microsoft and Apple and Google, maybe not so much Google, but most of these companies, they take a very, very long time to respond.
They sit on it.
Yeah, they just sit on it. And Google has been releasing some of the information on exploits and vulnerabilities to Microsoft and some others, and they just don't do anything. And then it 60 days go by, and then they start releasing the actual exploit code in order to get companies to, you know, actually fix the stupid bugs.
Let's continue with your calls and thoughts. Welcome here, 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. You can join us on the radio. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. Sorry about that noise there. 855-450-3733. 855-450-FREE, like freedom. With you tonight, it's Ian,
Chris,
and Daryl.
Don't forget to check out more of Chris over on thinkpenguin.com. I mean, you don't blog there or anything like that, but that's your business.
Actually, there is a blog.
Is there?
And yeah. And oh, okay. We don't have a whole heck of a lot. It's mostly events we attend, and sometimes we promote certain projects and or... people being arrested for, you know,
like you
tour. No, not me. Oh, okay. I didn't promote
your own arrest,
that, and that was mainly because it wasn't technology related.
Yeah, sure.
And so it just, I didn't think it would be appropriate for that blog.
So thinkpenguin.com, go check them out. You get some privacy oriented technology, and this fits in well because we're talking about the ransomware that's happening around the country. It's attacking Windows computers. So if you are using a Think Penguin Linux based laptop, you're safe.
Yeah, you should be. Actually, even the other exploit with the Intel stuff shouldn't work on our systems because the AMT stuff is, or the vPro stuff that it's relating to is not there intentionally.
I wish we could talk more about this ransomware thing, but we got a load of calls all of a sudden here at the very end of the show, so we're going to go to the phones and to the phone. But check out thinkpenguin.com and also bitcoin.com. Bitcoin is, you know, the price has been going down over the last day, but over the last few months it's been going up overall, and it's been hitting record highs.
Yeah, it went from almost like $1,000 to
up to like $1,800 plus. Yeah.
Even if it goes down, anybody who's, you know.
It always goes down a little bit, right?
It does, if it goes down quite a bit, you're still going to be making out.
So Bitcoin's price is amazing, but unfortunately behind the scenes there's some ugliness. And that involves these fees that are happening. Daryl, you just spent $2 to send how much today?
$63, and it was last night.
Last night.
$2.
$1.64. Close enough to $2.
Yeah, wow.
It's getting pretty crazy. And Bitcoin.com's been reporting on this. They're of the opinion that the current Bitcoin Core development team isn't taking satisfactory steps to ensure the growth and advancement of Bitcoin in accordance with Satoshi's vision. As community efforts to resolve these problems have failed, it's necessary to resolve them with a different approach by using subreddit r/BTC instead of r/Bitcoin and running Bitcoin Unlimited. You're casting a vote against the current development team. You can learn more at bitcoin.com. That's bitcoin.com. At some point, I'm just going to have to stop spending Bitcoin, and I don't want that to happen. I don't know where that point is going to be, but like we all here regularly go to a local business called Local Burger here on Main Street in Keene. They accept Bitcoin for their food, and we've gone there and we've spent upwards of a dollar in some cases on sending Bitcoin to the business. When we started doing this, it was like 5 cents to send $10 worth of Bitcoin. It was 5 cents to send $1,000 worth of Bitcoin. But now it's the average, and this was like a week ago when I heard these numbers, so it's probably higher now. But the average like a week ago was $1.15 per transaction. The median transaction was 65 cents per transaction. And it's just, it's gone insane.
Yeah.
So we're fanatics. So we're likely to be willing to spend, let's say it's a $10 meal, you spend a dollar, that's a 10% fee that you just spent to give the person Bitcoin. The average customer is not going to be willing to do that. We're willing to do it because we're fanatics about Bitcoin, but even as fanatical as I am, I don't think I could do it if it was $2. I mean, it's just, then it's getting, it's already insane at $1. Mm-hmm. At 20%, it's just psycho to spend that kind of a fee. Which is going to hurt because then the business owner is going to see the Bitcoin sales dropping off. Mm. They're going to wonder what's going on, and we're going to have to say, "Hey, Bitcoin's broken."
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter if you're going to there's like an auto shop here in town that accepts Bitcoin. Okay, fine. If it's a $1,000 repair bill and it's a dollar, no problem. If it's $5, no problem. I'll go ahead and spend that. That's not a big deal at that, you know, comparison. But if I'm spending $10 and I've got to spend $2 to send a $10 worth of Bitcoin, that's too much for me.
Right.
I can't, you know, I mean, I could afford to do it, but why? Why would I want to do it at that point? So anyway, go to Bitcoin.com to get the latest on this and see how this geek war behind the scenes of Bitcoin has been developing. Let's go to your phone calls and thoughts. Aaron's been waiting patiently in New Orleans listening to WGSO. Go ahead, Aaron.
Yeah, hey guys. I just want to give you a quick update on my case. I've spoken to you a couple of times about I had filed a lawsuit against the city for false arrest. I had written some letters. This was back in 2014 that criticized the local judge. And the police obtained an arrest warrant accusing me of stalking through these written letters. And so,
hold on. Now, you were writing letters to the newspaper?
No, I was writing letters to people that had business associations with him.
Sorry. I didn't get that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was basically saying, you know, this is what this judge and his family had been implicated in. And if I were you, I wouldn't do any business with them. So it was kind of like
that is free speech.
I know. I know.
Is it public official?
So they charged you with stalking?
Right, through these written letters.
Oh,
now,
my God.
The district attorney dropped the case. It took him about four months to actually drop it, but the district attorney dropped it. I had to spend money to get out of jail, you know, a lawyer, all of that. So anyway, my lawyer files a lawsuit against the city claiming false arrest, false imprisonment in federal court. The trial court judge threw the case out saying that the city is immune, the police officers are immune from being sued. We appealed it to the U.S. Fifth Circuit, and the U.S. Fifth Circuit agreed, saying that the police officers obtained an arrest warrant. Therefore, the police can no longer be held liable since they obtained a warrant.
This is exactly what we were talking about.
They went to a judge, and the judge agreed that they could do what they asked to do, and so therefore, because the lawyer in a robe said they can do it, they can do it, and I'm another lawyer in a robe, so I'm going to back up my brother, and that's what they call each other, brother.
It's weird. It's so creepy.
Going to back up my brother.
Even if they're against one another, they'll call each other brother.
Yeah.
This is exactly what we were talking about earlier in the show tonight with all the bureaucratic communities protecting themselves. So the appeals court agreed with the lower court, and so you're going to call it quits? What's the latest?
Yeah, I mean, that's it, unless you want to try to you know, take it any higher. But basically, and you can go online, the U.S. Fifth Circuit, you know, they put all of their rulings up there. This happened in early May, so the ruling's up there. And basically, this is what the Fifth Circuit is saying, is that even if your First Amendment right is violated, okay, but if they obtained an independent warrant, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a permission slip to them to harass people that they don't like. They don't like you because you were
slipped to commit crime.
You were yeah, that's what they're doing. I mean, they're going.
Well, in the words of Richard Nixon, it's not illegal when the government does it.
Yeah.
Right. So don't like you, if you're saying something that they don't like, which is what you were doing, you were saying, hey, this judge is corrupt. You know, I want to let you know this as an associate of his, which is very similar to what we've done here in Keene, New Hampshire, where in the past we've gone to the judge's house and protested outside of it. We've been to a police officer's house where Pete Ayer from copblock.org went and knocked on the doors of the neighbors to let them know that they were living next door to a man who knocked an innocent man off of a bicycle, which happened in Derek J's victimless crime spree. You can see that video happening, so they let the neighbors know. That's essentially the exact same thing, just spreading knowledge about what these government goons are doing. They don't like that. They come in, they arrest you. You have to go through the whole criminal process and hope that they'll drop the charges. And then, as you said, you've paid this attorney who knows how much money to defend you and to take this case to court all the way up through an appeals court. I mean, how much money have you spent on this?
The lawyer's the most expensive part.
Yeah.
Well, this lawyer, he was very understanding about what happened, so he agreed to do it on a basis where whatever the amount we had, whatever amount we would get in the lawsuit, he would get, he would get his
oh,
feedback.
So he did it on what is it? What do they call it? Speculation?
Contingency?
Contingency, that's the word. He did it on contingency.
Yes, right.
Oh, thank goodness you found an attorney like that, because a lot of these guys will not take cases like yours. Aaron, thanks for the update tonight, man. I appreciate hearing from you.
Yeah, especially when you know you're going to lose.
Let's talk to Susan in Delaware. You're on Free Talk Live. Hello, Susan. Susan in Delaware, going once. Susan in Delaware, going twice. All right, thanks for the call tonight. So the ransomware thing, again, spreading right now. They pointed out here at the end of the story that, you know, people just don't update their machines. Obviously, not everybody's going to flip over to a ThinkPenguin.com Linux machine. So if you aren't doing that, you should probably run the damn updates and get the update from Microsoft, like, tonight.
Right. Microsoft said that...
So is there an update yet, though?
That was Microsoft March. Said, today our engineers added detection and protection against the new malicious software known as Ransom Win32.WannaCrypt. In March, we provided a security update. So they have an additional update today.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I think when I started reading it, there was no update.
So you should totally check for that. We're out of time for tonight. You can join us online in the meantime over at freetalklive.com.
And get away from Microsoft ASAP.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
Your amp will directly change more lives by getting Free Talk Live in front of people looking for talk radio online and on the air. You can help by joining the AMP program for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com and getting perks. That's amp.freetalklive.com.